It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today we are looking at Oz Academy, one of my favourite Japanese wrestling promotions. And I'm looking at it with Mr. Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be back. Our first show of the year together. So, glad we're kicking it off with something special and different for me. So,
yeah, definitely. So we should really explain what Oz Academy is. I will give you a rough history of the Oz Academy in a moment, but I'd like to know what Marcus thought he was expecting when he was watching this, because it's a very different kind of product to what you're used to, because normally it's Chelsea or Christy or maybe Alex that kind of looks after the Joshy end for us. So what were you expecting going into this?
I chose to look at this because obviously I don't necessarily get as much of the female product as I would like to, but that was one of the reasons why. But I don't know. I guess, obviously I knew it was, that Japanese style, but it was even a little bit more off the reservation than that for me, with some of the matches, the way they presented. Obviously, I come across names like Aja Kong and others, but I guess it was just a little off, just only in the fact that I kept having to remind myself that rules are a bit more relaxed in Japan.
Well, the rules are a bit more relaxed in Oz Academy, let's be blunt.
Yeah. So when things would happen, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This is an all-women's promotion, but I'm pretty sure as much time as I've rewinded this back, dude, with the chair, beating the living hell out of this lady. Okay, all right, I'm going with it. If I'm going to get invested, I got to go with it. So that happened several times. But, once you kind of got into it, they kind of set you up for what was going to be a main of the show. It's not like these things randomly happen and they never happened again. So,
okay, then. Well, I should explain the history of Oz Academy. Cast your mind back to 1996, the mid-90s. As you know, a very hot period of professional wrestling in Japan. And in Gaia, the promotion of Chigusou Nagayo, there was the rule of no 26. If you were 26 years old or over, you could still wrestle for Gaia. And one of the people that took advantage of that was a lady called Mayumi Ozaki. Now, you've heard me talk about Mayumi Ozaki a lot, and her tag team with Dynamite Kansai, and the fact that I think their matches with Manami Toyota and Toshiya Yamada are the greatest professional wrestling matches of all time, and I still stand by that statement. God damn it. However, Mayumi Ozaki herself was no slow coach when it came to singles wrestling, and she was a big star for JWP. But eventually, she thought she'd had her time there. She did an awful lot of different things within the JWP universe, but she moved on to Gaia, and she started, as she meant to go on, by forming a heel stable called Oz Academy. Oz Academy featured herself and a bunch of other veterans, but also, notably, a lot of younger wrestlers from the Gaia stable, like Chikayo Nagashima, Rikiko Amano, who later be known as Carlos Amano, and Sugar Saito, who would join up as part of Oz Academy and become a faction within the company. They would even have their own dojo, a separate dojo to the Gaia Academy, to make sure it was different. So Mayumi Ozaki was kind of working both ends of the middle. When Gaia went out of business in 2005, Oz Academy kept going. They started themselves because they'd already been running events since 1998 as independent events of Gaia. So they were kind of like the NWO, except for they came from within the organization, not outsiders going into the organization, if that makes sense. So Oz Academy started as a faction. It's had various people within the lineup, but the two constants that have been with Oz Academy for the last 23 years are Mayumi Ozaki, the founder of Oz Academy, and a gentleman called Police, who Marcus alluded to there. Why is this dude attacking these women? Police is a member of Oz Academy. He's run interference for Mayumi Ozaki for the best part of a quarter century now. He always is a badass heel, no matter what you do. He's a jerk, he's an asshole, and people hate him for it. He even went full-on heel at Manami Toyota's retirement do, and even though all the members of Sekiki Gun, or Oz Academy Gun, were playing full on heel, they played nice and gave Manami flowers for her retirement. Police wouldn't do that. at all. So yeah, and Oz Academy is, but a lot of people and former members who have done all sorts of brilliant things. I mean, if you look at, there's a long list. If you look on Wikipedia, you can find out who was members of Oz Academy at different times. People like Carlos Amano, Devil Masami, Dynamite Kansai, Kairu, Manami Teota was also part of Oz Academy. She was brought into Gaia by Oz Academy to start with. She had a run as a heel. So Oz Academy has been an interesting organization because it came out of an angle and has been around and with us for 23 years. So this promotion is kind of old school Joshi in one sense. It doesn't get much more old school than Oz Academy in the kind of approach because it's a 23-year-old organization, now the oldest organization left in Joshi after JWP had to close down and reopen as J-Pure. And it kind of centers around a lot of older stars. Miyu Miyazaki is in her late 40s, so is Aja Kong, so is Kiori Yonayama, she's in her late 30s, early 40s. But there are some younger talent there as well. Hiro Matsumoto, who's one of the big draws in Joshi, Hirokura Shida, who we talked about last week. This is a really interesting and varied kind of organization. One thing that this show that we're going to look at does feature is kind of different from the other shows is Oz Academy don't have a streaming service. They work everything off TV deals with Gaiora, and they work, so which means we can find it on Puro Wrestle Dream and find it on YouTube. And I've been watching Oz Academy shows for years because they usually put about one TV show out a month to catch everybody up on what's been happening. But they don't have a streaming service. Everything they do is based on TV shows and how a TV show works. A standard TV show, they put on one of their big cards, they edit it down, they don't give away the main event, and they put loads of information into that show. They have some hot angles, they have some interesting matchups, and that's kind of the layout. So that's kind of what we're dealing with. Now we're looking at two shows. One was on the 13th of January, and that was from Okinawa in Japan called Diego no Hasenuku. But prior to that, there was a show on 6th of January called Every Little Step from Shinjuku Face. Now you may bear in mind that last week we looked at a show from Shinjuku Face. This was held on the same day in the same building 2 days after Wrestle Kingdom. And Sendai Girls, who run the show before or after they did, have a close relationship with Oz Academy because they've worked together a lot, and Meiko Satomura has been a big draw for Oz Academy down the years as well. So yeah, this is how things work in Joshi. So we'll start with the show on the 6th of January. We're only going to talk about matches that were on the TV show. So the first match we saw was Mayumi Izaki, the leader of Oz Academy Sakukigun, versus Tsubasa Kurigaki, 5 minutes and 57 seconds. Kurigaki is a JPO wrestler. She comes in and guests for Oz Academy, though she's a big draw for Oz Academy. This was the first of number one contender first round matches in a tournament for the open weight title, which I believe is currently owned by Hikaru Shida. And it was 5 minutes and 57 seconds and kind of told you exactly what Oz Academy is all about. So what did you think of this, Marcus?
This, like I said, it's got things up and running for me quick. You know, God bless Tsubasa. She got it from both ends, like you said. What was the guy's name?
Police.
Yeah, Police. Police. You know, gave her no quarter, and you know, Izaki kind of finished off. It's funny, but as soon as you said you know that she was in an organization with the last name Gun, this tactic made all the sense in the world to me. All this to me coming from off of New Japan. So this kind of it worked. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, it said what it needed to say and did what it needed to do, you know. And then obviously once things kind of got back in the ring, it got slightly better for Ms. Tsubasa, but not by much, because I think the rest of the gang joined in, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, she had a work cut out for, and I think would have ended in a small package, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah.
That was definitely interesting.
Well, Kurigaki is a powerhouse. The first time I saw her was on the Joshi Mania tour that Shikara ran earlier in this decade, around about 2011, if I remember correctly. And she was a monstrous powerhouse. She actually managed to torture rack, I think, a couple of guys. I think it was. I can't remember who it was. It was a couple of the younger guys off the Shikara roster who weren't massive. But she torture racked two guys. That's pretty impressive. and here she Torturacked two members of Sekikigun. So, by the way,
yeah.
the heel group in Oz Academy now are actually called Sekikigun, which is rather than Oz Academy, because obviously that'd be really confusing.
Yeah. But it was a impressive performance. Took a lot of punishment. I mean, she did a torture rack, and she got towards the very end, got missed it, so that's never fun.
No, that is another Sekikigun signature series is missed. Interference, chains, whips, pirates, all that stuff, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you like this then?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I watched it more and got invested in the characters, it'd be easy to go along with the stuff. Because obviously we're gonna get to the last match, but that had a lot of the whips and chains and, of it all, which was took some getting used to. Because I'm like, oh wow, they not getting their hands up for a lot of these whips to the face. It's sad to hurt, but this is what you can appreciate about obviously that Japanese style. But I think if I watched it more and got invested in the characters, it'll be easy to go along with. But I definitely appreciate even more so than the singles of it all, the tag style and how they do with that, and kind of the differentiation in between. Obviously you saw definitely in the tag matches the difference in age and the mentality when it came to the style. So
okay then, well, our next matchup was Yoshiko versus Yumiki Hata. This went to a time limit draw in 10 minutes as part of the contenders first round match, number one contenders tournament that we were looking at here. I'll be honest with you, I've not seen Yoshiko wrestle since about 2014 after the Yasukawa incident, because I flatly refused to watch her wrestle because I don't like her. I think she's a horrible, horrible person who shouldn't have a job for the way she treats other people. But she was on this card, and I promised I would watch this card, so I did. Yumiki Hata is a legend. She is one of the class of 86. She came through the system with Aja Kong, Combat Toyota, Toshiya Yamada, Akira Hokuto, and she's still swinging kicks like she's never swung before. She was in a mixed martial arts match at the age of something like 53 a couple of years ago against Gabby Garcia. She was the one that ran the ropes, and Gabby Garcia thought she might die. Yumiki Hata, doing pretty well. And this was kind of a very slow burn, big hitters, AJW style match. It was much more kind of take your time version of what a wrestling match should be. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, this was kind of slowing it down, being more my speed as opposed to the immediate kind of bullet train I started off on. So this is kind of more my speed, that kind of style. So, you got the brawling and kind of that almost Suzuki Gun style on the outside a little bit, with some submissions in here, like real naked choke and whatnot. And obviously we saw how it ended, but this was more so my speed. But yeah, definitely, even just off first glance, I think I gravitated more towards Ms. Hata.
Yeah.
In that regard, so.
Yeah, I mean, she is a big, heavy hitter. She doesn't kick as much as she used to when she was younger, when she was a bit more kick pads and MMA kind of focused. She's much more of a straight-up wrestler these days, but she's still something special to watch and to see. If Pro Wrestling Eve have a chance to bring her over, she's something I would really like to see, as like a bucket list wrestlers I would like to see. The trouble is Pro Wrestling Eve keep like booking people I've always wanted to see, so my bucket list is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. but it's a possibility, I guess. It'd be nice to see her come over here and have kind of the same treatment that other people from the Japanese industry have seen in the last couple of years. It'd be nice to see her, because she was just a bigger part of the AJW story as all the other women. She was kind of really the first to popularize the MMA approach to pro wrestling the way we see it done now, with people like, not necessarily Ronda Rousey, but like the MMA-like. She kind of kicked it up another level from the Crush Girls. They were kind of the first ones to be really influenced by that. She was really heavily influenced by Akira Maeda. Dynamite Cancer came along at the same time. They kicked an awful lot for kicking. So you see a lot of things that people like Minoru Suzuki do. A lot of the things you see people like Loki and people like that were influenced by what these people do.
That's interesting. I guess for me, I guess to kind of mildly say, when of course,
only so many ways you
can, my wrestling encyclopedias, I could ask you. I guess that kind of plays off, the evolution of how, going from submissions, and even I guess a step down from that would be joint manipulation, which I see a lot of, obviously, in, you know, with the British.
Before Kimura did.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Suzuki tradition is the Billy Robinson, Carl Gotch tradition, which comes from the Snake Pit in Great Britain, in Wigan, you know, still there, churning out catch-as-catch grand grapplers, has done for the better part of a century. It comes from the shoot style of the pits in Lancashire and Yorkshire, where there wasn't much to do, and submission wrestling became a sport based on the fact that with submissions, you could have a definitive winner and loser, where with pinfalls, it was kind of much more about what the referee was going to count. So to make sure that everyone got a fair shot as far as gambling was concerned, shoot fighting became submission-based, and that's where the joint manipulation came to, because the body mechanics of actual shoot wrestling and catch wrestling became the basis for what professional wrestling in the United Kingdom would be. It comes from the shoot style of the pits in Lancashire and Yorkshire, where there wasn't much to do, and submission wrestling became a sport based on the fact that with submissions, you could have a definitive winner and loser, where with pinfalls, it was kind of much more about what the referee was going to count. So to make sure that everyone got a fair shot as far as gambling was concerned, shoot fighting became submission based, and that's where the joint manipulation came to, because the body mechanics of actual shoot wrestling and catch wrestling became the basis for what professional wrestling in the United Kingdom would be in the late 1930s. Now, that first round of professional wrestling in the late 1930s kind of petered out after the war, and then after the Second World War, we had the joint promotions growth that we had with ITV and, you know, the original world of sports style that really flourished in that time period. But it was all based around that very realistic and very real shoot version of professional wrestling that was based out of the Wigan pits. And as a result of that, it affected what trainers around the world did, and especially with the Japanese trainers, because they were influenced very much by people like Billy Robinson, by Joe Cornelius, who was another British trainer who went over to Japan to help out with training there. He was actually asked by Billy Robinson to go there and ended up wrestling a lot whilst he was there. He wasn't keen on that so much, but that's the way things go. And he went and did a lot of wrestling there at the same time. Also, Bert Azzurati has spent a lot of time in Japan, and that influenced really what people like Luthez was another grappler and joint manipulator, but he came from the American tradition and from the businessman's gym in St. Louis. But that tradition that happened after the Second World War filtered into what the women was doing. If you look back at Joshi from the 1970s and British wrestling from the 1970s, they look awfully similar. I'm sorry to wind on there, but I hope I gave you the answer you were looking for.
No, that's great. Because I wanted to know where that kind of came from, because, like I said, I've seen that in both the British and the UK, and obviously in Japan. So, you know, learning the foundation of that is extremely helpful.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Billy Robinson. It's Billy Robinson, yeah. And Carl Gotch, because they were from the Snake Pit. And the UWFI, when they founded the UWFI, they called their training school the Snake Pit as well. So it was the UWF Snake Pit. So yeah, so that's really where that joint manipulation kind of deal came from, especially the stuff you see like Zack Sabre Jr. Zack Sabre Jr. actually isn't as British as perhaps some people think he is, just because he's kind of like this freewheeling folk style wrestler. He's kind of been influenced by that style as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very interesting. Right. But yeah, good question. It's the same with everything else wrestling. People take bits and pieces from everywhere and add bits and pieces. I mean, like, you know, Marty Scurll is probably the most straight up and down British style wrestler that New Japan has, but his finish he got from like watching Bob Backlund and people like that. Even though it's a shoot style move, so there you go. Okay, so the next match was a tag team match: Ryo Mizumi and Tsunoki Kato, The next match featured Ryo Mizumi and Tsunoki Kato. They defeated Hikaru Shida and Rina Yamashita in 17 minutes and 48 seconds in a cracking tag match that was really back and forth. Tsunoki Kato, for those of you who don't know, was actually a Gaia development. She actually trained at the same time as Mako Satomura and made a debut against Mako Satomura. They went on to form a tag team that were Gaia World Junior Tag Team Champions. Ryo Mizumi has been around for a long time too. Hikaru Shida, you could hear me and Christy talking about her last week when she was wrestling for Sendai Girls. Big fan of her. And she's the current Oz Academy Openweight Champion. She tagged with Rina Yamashita in Oz Academy in a tag team where they constantly fall out all the time because they're jealous of each other. Never heard that from a tag team before, have you, Marcus?
Never. Yeah. I'm just glad you ironed that. I mean, I was just in there trying to figure out what was the beat. I mean, you can kind of, I guess, guesstimate during the match, but obviously because it was the Japanese commentary, I was like, all right. Obviously, definitely an element that made the match more interesting.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, this was kind of what I was talking about. You know, you had the kind of the youth versus kind of that veteran experience because, you know, we saw that. You know, Ryo and Sunoco was far more cohesive in their work than you know, the other two, and
Yeah.
they kind of forced them into kind of, you know, working together, if you want to call it that, because they was going back and forth as the matches went on. But you know, they was kind of on the defense for so long that they kind of had to kind of grit their teeth and bear it for the most part. Still lost, but you know, it definitely made for an interesting bout.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun this match. I really enjoyed it. I just love watching these tag teams work together, you know. I especially love watching Hikaru Shida. I mean, as far as Yamashita's kind of like a big girl, she's a big hitter kind of wrestler, but she can really go. She's a lot of fun and she's clearly enthusiastic and enjoying it. Mizunami's very much in the same mold. And Tsunoki Kato is just such a classic wrestler. She has such a classic style to her. And I love all four of them. So this was really good fun, just fun wrestling match with nothing to do but just tell a quick story.
Exactly, and I think it was Ryo and Sunoco that came out to Skillet's Hero.
Yes.
So yeah, that was bonus points for me.
Okay then, next matchup is a Tribune Show favorite. Sakura Hirata defeats Taya Honma in 12 minutes and 53 seconds. Now, Sakura, before she started, did point out that she was injured. As you remember from last week's show when me and Christy talked, she did have a severe injury to her goosing fingers, which she has bandaged well. And because she was in the semi-main event this week, she did say she was going to try really, really hard to wrestle properly and not just do comedy match. And to an extent, she succeeded. And in 12 minutes and 53 seconds, a pretty actually tough going match. Taya Honma lost to Sakura Hirata, but it was a ton of fun. What did you think of this, Marcus?
You know, this is just kind of speaks to the work. Even though I couldn't understand her, I she had me cracking up the whole time. Just off her facial expressions, the stuff with the finger was great. And no disrespect to the both of them, because I don't know if this was a thing with their characters or just something they usually do, but they like had each other. I think was it Sakura that had like a leg lock.
Yes.
And then both of them was like doing like basically pregnancy breaths, like labor breaths. It was hilarious. But it wasn't a complete comedy match. Kind of had a little bit of everything, which I appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sakura is hilarious.
She is. She's awesome. As we know, she is actually a mother because she takes the baby to matches with her. And presumably, like we said last week, some poor rookie has to childcare for the baby while she's in the
Wow.
ring. But yeah, so she was going through her Lamar's classes whilst doing her match as Hanmo locked in a leg lock. Yeah, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliantly funny. Just brilliantly well done. I love this. Just to bits. It's just ace. It's my kind of thing. Kind of thing that Garin Duenas would be very mad about. And Jim Cornette would spin in his grave, even though he's not
No,
dead
God.
yet. All right then, the show actually kind of flits back and forth. So this match, the next couple of matches were also from the tournament matches. So the first match of the next night when we were in Okinawa, which was on the 13th of January, was Aja Kong versus Kikuri Sekiguchi, a young lady making her way in the business the only way she knows how, much like Dukes of Hazzard. And the way that she decided to go about her business was to attack Aja Kong with her own waste paper bin. Now, I'm not suggesting this was her downfall, but it was her downfall.
Yeah, she as we say over here, she gave it the old college try.
Yes. Now, she's been in wrestling for a year. And just to kind of like balance that, Aja Kong has been in wrestling for 33 years. Sorry, yeah, 33 years. So, you know, lacking somewhat in experience by 32 years, and my experience tells me you don't hit Aja Kong square in the head with her own waste paper basket.
Yeah, and the fact that she started off with that, it's bold.
It's bold. Yeah, it's a bold maneuver.
Yeah, that's one word for it. but yeah, it kind of reminds me of you know, watching New Japan and obviously watching like a young lion get the poor look of the draw and have to face a pissed off Fale that week. Which, let's be honest, that's most of it, Fale. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like I said, she tried and you know, Kong, she, you know,
did what Kong does.
The offense in, and then she put her through the paces.
Oh yeah, held her three rows back for a start and then started swinging chairs until she calmed down. And then Sekiguchi go back in the ring, and for to be honest, for the fact that she's only been in the ring for a year, she was a ring general and really looked after herself and made herself look fantastic. Because you're not going to look good as a rookie facing Aja Kong, because she can do anything she wants, quite simply, and it will look amazing. And Aja had her work boots on, and she made a look. She did not sell herself short, but she did make look Sekiguchi look like a threat. And it went to a 10-minute draw, basically because Aja landed the vertical drop brainbuster, but only put a foot on her chest because she was mad with her for trying to attack her with her own waste paper basket. And as a result of that, she kicked out on two, and she didn't get the spinning back fist in time to get the match. So Aja screwed up, and Kikaru survived to wrestle another day and didn't lose too much in the Oz Academy rankings. But obviously, time limit draw, single elimination, they both go out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, like you said, kudos to both parties because, you know, depending on the individual, you know, they could, you know, both could take liberties, obviously, from the younger talent, because obviously she's outsized by a significant pound percentage.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, from Kong's perspective, you know, she could, you know, definitely kind of just literally have her way effortlessly with her. But, you know, they both 100% professionals, like you said, both making each other, you know, look good. Because we've seen, you know, certain performers of Kong's size take liberties.
Yes.
And really, you know, by the end of it, really does neither party any favors. So.
Now, an interesting story that came from Chris Charlton's writings this week. He was translating a book about wrestlers and food. And he, in the book, they interviewed Bull Nakano about what she used to eat when she was training in AJW. And she basically went on a story about her steroid use and how the AJW doctor wasn't keen because she wasn't sure what kind of hormones were in steroids and what would they would do to her body, which is fairly reasonable. And Bull ignored her and went about her business. But the story that made me just like cringe was the fact that she wrestled Bull Nakano. Aja Kong wrestled Bull Nakano one night, and they had to send for an ambulance after the match. And they didn't send one for Aja, who was actually more injured, but no one realized at the time. So they had to give, when they came to check on both of them, they had to take Aja to the hospital first, despite the fact they called the ambulance for Bull Nakano, who had to wait till the next ambulance came.
Oh, wow. Was this just strictly match-based?
Yeah.
Did this kind of have something to do with a steroid usage?
No, just purely from the actual matches were that tough. This was kayfabe, by the way. They weren't going out to hurt each other. It was just happening.
Yeah.
You know, and it was to say that Aja Kong has had a 33-year career after living through all of that and the pressure she was under is quite remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it has to be, you know, hellacious because, you know, just in general, all this stuff, you know, what everybody kind of shares is, you know, basically what you're doing is sending your body through many car accidents night after night. So to do that, you know, for as long as she has, you know, at her size, which a lot of times incurs more injury a lot of times, even if you are, you know, insignificant, you know, shape, ring shape or what have you, it can be stressful, you know, kudos to her.
And out on top of that, she is the daughter of a black man and a Japanese woman. A black American man and a Japanese woman. And you can see the kind of pressure she's been under.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as Chris Wolf once said to me when I was talking to her last year for when I wrestled her, when I interviewed her for Total Wrestling Magazine, Chris said they didn't want her. You know, they did not want her to be a star. And she denied everybody and became the biggest star in the industry. And that's why Aja Kong is great. Anywho, moving on. Kiyoru Yaniyama also defeated Sioru Anu in 4 minutes and 14 seconds in the first round. This was a ton of fun. I had not seen Sierra Anu wrestle before. Keri Yoneyama, I'm well aware of. She's amazing. I love her to bits. She's a kind of bubbly comedic wrestler, but she also turn it on when she needs to. Yoneyama is a veteran of JWP. She's wrestled for Ice Ribbon. She's mates with Emi Sakura. She's been all over the world. She's done all sorts of things. She retired once and stopped the bell on the retirement 10-bell count at 9 because she was scared because she didn't want to retire. She's amazing. She's wonderful, and I love her to bits. Sierra Anu, I'd not seen wrestle before, but I was thoroughly impressed. And one of the best bridging suplexes in the business right now. She's fantastic. She's a member of Ozaki Gun or Sakuki Gun, but she can really go. She can really wrestle. So this was a lot of fun. What do you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, this was fun as well. You know, like you said, definitely instant love for Kaori, because, I mean, you know, for me personally, because I appreciated the outfit, because that kind of reminds me of any anime fans out there, that kind of reminds me of Goku and his colors. But yeah, I mean, just that dynamic of her basically being outnumbered this entire match, and like I said, because it's a, you know, liberties are taken, you know, not much was going to be done unless somebody came out to help her. So she basically was literally took a lashing for however many minutes, and she, you know, she came back and got it done. Yes. Those gun tactics are across the board everywhere.
She was a victim of Suzuki Gun's whips and chains, literally.
Yeah, and I'm looking back at it now. Yeah, she really does have one of the best bridges.
Oh yeah.
You know, eat your heart out, Miss Alicia Fox.
Just to give you a clue, Ayanu started professional wrestling 3 years ago. She's only been going for 3 years. Fisherman Buster is, or Fisherman Suplex is her finisher. She was trained by Yuni Manase, and she's been wrestling in Oz Academy mainly. She's wrestled in other places too. I'm just trying to see where else she's been. Oh, yeah, she's from Act Wrestling Z, but she wrestles in Oz Academy. She's wrestling for Ice Ribbon a lot this year. She's wrestled for LLPW, AGZ, Act Rest Girls, Kaintai Dojo, Ice Ribbon. She's been all over the place, so go find her stuff, because she's really, really good and really impressive. Okay, then, so the next matchup, we will go back to our main event to finish off, which was Beast Friend. This is back to Tokyo and Shinjuku Face on the 6th. Beast Friend is the awesome tag team of Hiroo Matsumoto, Kiyori Yaneyama, and Aja Kong. They defeated Ozaki Gun, Maya Yukiyuki, Sayara Anu, and Yumi Oka in 15 minutes and 31 seconds. What were your thoughts on this, Marcus?
This was really good for the main event. Just solid all around, and I think this, you kind of, like I say, once you kind of, you know, get out of your minds that with the whole lax rules of it all, you know, you appreciate it more, obviously, Aja Kong and, you know, Hiroo and Kiyori. They you know, they put, it was just a hell of a match. I mean, you know, Ozaki Gun was very diligent and, you know, splitting the ring up and making themselves everywhere at all times, which is something unique and, you know, proficient tag team wrestling. Not easy to pull off.
No.
Sometimes it can literally become a cluster, if you will, which we've seen multiple times in certain iterations. But, yeah, this was just a fun bout, you know, obviously. You know, it took a while for Aja to get in there, and then they isolated her and whatnot, and just a lot of moves that were trying to be pulled off that obviously got cut off, and then for things to kind of come to a rousing conclusion with Aja getting on the top rope, and I'm like, oh my God, is she going for a moonsault? She just fell back with the elbow. I was like, thank God. So that, you know, that, I mean, it just worked. I mean, like you said, once you get used to the controlled chaos, I call it. You know, it kind of becomes real. You kind of just get immersed in it, you know, because there was a lot of good near falls in this match, too.
Yeah, I mean, this match was a lot of fun to watch because Yoneyama's really fun, and Kong and Matsumoto have been tagging together for a while. Ozaki Gun are a kind of well-oiled machine, really, as far as their in-rings and their in-ring tag wrestling is concerned. And, yeah, it just is fun. I like this promotion a lot just because they do actually tell stories and there's longer ongoing themes. You know, when you get to their big shows, they do a big show at Yokohama, which puts together the combination of all their storylines for the year. Sometimes their storylines go back 13 or 14 years. I mean, I remember watching, I think it was 2 years ago, I watched their big show from Yokohama, and the main event was, I think it was Kato versus Miyu Miyazaki in a hair versus hair match. And it had gone way back to the very beginning of Oz Academy, like 20 years before, and how they interacted with each other back then, and the offense that Kato had taken from being a member of Oz Academy and turning on the organization and turning back. And it's like, you know, how can you write things that are based on stuff that happened nearly 20 years ago? But they do, and they make it work. And it's so fun to watch as a promotion for me, because it's long-term storytelling. You've got to watch it to invest, but they don't ignore the new things that are going on in professional wrestling. So what are your thoughts on the company? What are your thoughts on this presentation, Marcus? And would you watch more Oz Academy?
Yeah, I dig it. I like it. You know, it kind of has that intimate vibe to it. And I think a lot of characters that you can get instantly invested in, specifically Ozaki Gun, who just have this, you know, this instant flair about themselves. It kind of reminded me of what we got in Lucha Underground when, you know, it was Kairi Sane and her crew kind of in on Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of those vibes. So, and like you said, they come off and they dress alike. They, you know, very cohesive, just like a pure weld oil machine. And like I said, those quote unquote gun tactics are universal. So, you know, but you know, they got a little bit of everything. You got your serious characters, you got your little bit of comedy, you got your horses, if you will, you got your smaller, more speedsters. So it's a, you know, it's a little bit of everything. And it's funny because it's kind of, you know, been off the radar. I think I was going to ask you if, you know, talents the level of like Io Shirai or Kairi Sane have ever, you know, passed through the promotion.
It's a very interesting. Oz Academy kind of doesn't play well with others a lot of the time, shall we say, politically. So there are certain people that work well in that environment because, like, Rossi. Right, I'll start again. The basic principle is this: Aja Kong is one of the key members of that roster. Aja can't stand Rossi Ogawa, so Stardom wrestlers don't wrestle for Oz Academy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, they fell out years ago about a promotion called Arcyon, which I'm sure we'll look at in the beginner's guide around about 1999. They fell out over the direction of that company when Aja was the head trainer of the dojo and the lead booker, and Rossi was the promoter. And basically, Aja accused Rossi of put advertising cards with her on it when she wasn't, after she'd left the company, and won't speak to her again at the moment, from what I understand. I believe that's the story I've heard from reading around the subject, essentially. And as for that means that Oz Academy won't be working there. Having said that, Yoshihiko is obviously a former Stardom wrestler, so, you know, Asuka's been to Oz Academy. One of the big matches I saw her with was a Kurashida on that big show from Yokohama. That's one that I saw a couple of years ago. That was on the match on that card. Meika Satomura does spend a lot of time in Oz Academy. She's a major draw for them. Io Shirai may have done in her younger days, but didn't once she'd signed on with Stardom, for the obvious reasons. Kagetsu is the current Stardom champion. She spent some time in Oz Academy when she was younger, but again, the Stardom connection kind of precludes her at the moment, but she has spent some time in Oz Academy. I'm trying to think if anybody else. Mio Shirai spent a lot of time in Oz Academy because she was a member of Tsukiki-gun. That's Io Shirai's sister. And that, I think, about covers it as far as the major stars you will have seen, because Kairi Sane obviously has been a Stardom girl before she went to WWE through all of her career, so she had no connection to Oz Academy. And Mayu Watani, again, has always been a Stardom girl. She has no connection either.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's very much the old Chargers kind of promotion. It's very much stabilized into kind of what the older generation of Joshi think wrestling should be.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, it's nice to hear that, you know, just that long-term storytelling is kind of universal across Japan.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, it's not always easy to do because you literally have to almost reconnect threads, but, you know, with certain things that are done or happened, like, ironically enough, like with the, I guess, divide between, like you said, Oz and certain other promotions, certain things happen and people just never forget.
Yes.
And kind of bring those things back into the forefront while you're like, what, like you said, while integrating those newer, obvious elements. And, you know, I think that's, you know, what Japanese wrestling has over a lot of American promotion is, you know, it doesn't have this selective memory about things.
No. You know? Everything's layered in from what's been happening.
Everything's everything's layered together, you know, everything's, you know, bills to, you know, what we get now, and kind of, you can always go back to it depending on what and, you know, how you do it. So, you know, like I said, definitely something I can get invested in.
I mean,
you know, with this.
I was going to say as well, it's kind of like the lunatics taking over the asylum, because, like, if you think about it, the hometown team in Sendai Girls who run the promotion are the babyfaces, right? Well, in Oz Academy, they're the bad guys. They're the heels. They're the ones you hate.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the opposite. It's the opposite way around of the expected norm. We don't follow the babyface in this promotion. They're not the key player. The key players are actually the bad guys.
Yeah, and that's, and you know, like you said, it's kind of interesting that their take on it, because, like, I think that what the Bullet Club was originally founded on, kind of that Guy Gene perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Bullet Club is a heel organization now, but it was always supposed to be a heel organization. It built on that nationalist ideal, and Tsukiki-gun kind of works in the traditional Japanese way. I mean, if you go back to the Terrible Alliance in the 1980s, of Dump Matsumoto, Bull Nakano, those people, that particular group of wrestlers, were incredibly influential, and they did the same things that Ozaki-gun do now. And I was just looking at some of their stuff this week. You know, I was looking at the way that Dump Matsumoto, she throws chains, she uses scissors, she uses all sorts of foreign objects, there's all sorts of interference all the way through matches against Crush Girls. And it was a big draw at the time. It wasn't necessarily the best wrestling, classical wrestling matches you would ever see, but they were heated brawls that were over. Like, never before have I seen wrestling that over with an audience, not connecting such an emotional way. You know, I've seen, like, you know, the Von Erichs in Texas. It was that, about that level, only with more girls screaming. You know, that was the amazing thing is, like, you go watch wrestling in Texas, and the Von Erich brothers are there, and they're all 20 to 25 years old, good-looking guys in tight shorts, and you can see why teenage girls like that. That's pretty obvious. But you go watch the Crush Girls in Tokyo, and they're straight up and down girl next door types, but the connection is much stronger because you can say, well, if I lost a few pounds and I went to the gym more often, I could be Chigusou Nagayo, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very
much. The relatability is always key, and it's interesting how you said, with, you know, obviously being Oz Academy, but calling themselves something else, and then you look at factions like Across the Way with Suzuki-gun, is, you know, you talked about, because they're kind of like the NWO, but in-house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's always an interesting dynamic of, as popular as the Bullet Club is, you can say the crux of that New Japan Foundation is Suzuki-gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that you know, perspective of, okay, if anybody or anything is going to take over this organization, it's going to be the people, you know, that's always been here.
Yeah, yeah.
That know this inside and out, that connect with this audience inside and out, even when they don't always want to connect with us. You know, we kind of bridge that gap. So that's, I mean, that's really great, because a lot of times what you see is a Bullet Club or NWO situation where you have those outsiders come in, gone to that popularity, crap on the homegrown talent, and depending on how it's booked, it doesn't necessarily do proper favors for said talent or the company. So.
No, I mean, like, Suzuki going to the rejects, you know, they all left the company or came back to the company, or had, you know, Harry Smith left New Japan to go to WWE, he came back. Lance Archer didn't start in New Japan, but he came back to New Japan. He was the perfect kind of fit for that guy that you want. Suzuki was a New Japan guy who left and came back again. All of these people are the rejects. They've all turned on people. They're the worst people. And it's the same with Ozaki's group. You look at the people that are in her organization, they're all turncoats. They're all untrustworthy. They're all people who turn their back on great stars and it, at some point or other, you know. And there's also, I mean, like, Kato is a good example. She only joined Ozaki-gun because at one point, I think in the 2010, only members of Ozaki-gun could challenge for the Openweight Championship. So she became a member just to challenge for the Openweight Championship. It plays with all sorts of trust issues with your friends and all sorts of things.
That sounds Jay White-ish.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. You know, there's all sorts of layers to this. Like, people were so anti Ozaki Gun, and then actually, well, I've got to play the game for a bit, or else I don't get anywhere. And that's just like, that's normal life. You know, we may hate certain things, and but we have to do it because we live in a capitalist society, and there's no other way to do things.
Go along and get along. Yeah.
How much of your moral spectrum can you go to get there? You know, that happens a lot in politics at the moment, like, you know, especially in the UK with Brexit. It's like, how many morally repugnant things can we stand up to get to where we want to go? But I'm sure you have similar issues with your current government. Governments around the world, let's be honest. It's not just our places, but yeah. Right then. Well, that kind of covers Oz Academy. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Marcus, because, you know, one day we're going to show somebody a show and they're just going to go, yeah, it was rubbish.
Oh man, I hope not. But obviously, you've interacted with fans on Twitter who's had deferring opinions before.
True.
Obviously, stuff is subjective. But you know, wrestling is far bigger than you know what we get over here. And you know, when you look at New Japan, they're not the only thing going on in the Japan hemisphere. So you know, I'm just glad that I was able to do it and got exposed to something else. Obviously, I don't think this is on the as violent spectrum as I think Alex or Chelsea have been exposed to, which I think I might be grateful for, because there's only so many barbed wire roped matches you can kind of go through sometimes. So this was kind of happy medium for me. Well, you know, I can put up with the whips and chains.
There you go. All right then. Well, thank you very much for listening to us today. Thank you for listening to our coverage of Oz Academy. We hope you enjoyed it. You can find out Paresso Dream, these shows. They do all stuff of Gayora TV. Might not stay up there very long though, but you can go find it and see if you can find it. You'll probably find loads of Oz Academy stuff on YouTube still and on Daily Motion. There is no streaming service. I can't send you to a legally viable streaming service, which I like to do because it's nice and wrestlers should get paid. But if you want to see it, you should go see it because it's really cool. And maybe if they get international responses like Stardom did and Sendai Girls did, they'll get a streaming service together so we can watch more of it. Exactly. There's a thought. Yes. Build it and they will come.
Yep.
Okay then. So thank you very much for listening to us today. My name's James Drupiner. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star. He is Marcus Green. You can follow him at Paradox Kid. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Oh, always a pleasure.
On Twitter, of course. On Facebook, you can find us at Drupiner Show. And you can follow us on Patreon, where you can keep the Drupiner Show free forever for everyone. That's us for this week. Later in the week, it'll be Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. They'll be looking back on the big stories from professional wrestling this week. I hope you enjoyed last week's show. They looked at the Royal Rumble and picked apart every show, all the entire show, match by match, and discussed endings and bookings and how they do things differently. So we'll see what they come up with this week. It should be really, really cool. We will be looking at new beginnings from New Japan Pro Wrestling next weekend. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.